Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm catching up. Last February, I attended the Marriott Jazz Party in Newport, California, and was lucky enough not only to see and hear and be in the presence of some of the best jazz musicians in the world, however much they may not be household names. And I also was lucky enough to be able to interview six of them. Immediately upon returning home, I played the interviews that I did with Anat Cohen, who is this year's Billboard choice for Clarinetist of the Year, and Holly Hoffman and Graham Dechter. But I got involved with the other stuff that I do, the other interviews that needed to be played in order to promote theater that's going on in Sarasota and other things. And so some of them had to wait, and I'm going to start catching up with them now. Today, I am playing the interview I did with Eric Reed. And I'm sorry that you had to wait so long both to hear the interview and Eric's music. I'm playing a cut from his CD, The Dancing Monk. He's clearly a Thelonious Monk fan. There's a better word for that. But anyway, today you get to hear Eric talking and playing, both of which are tremendous pleasures. And so hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down
show is, as always, about knowing thyself, about being who you undeniably really are, about having access to everything that makes you you. This, of course, means not only those things of which you are proud, those things which you believe make you someone else would love, but these things that you may not be so proud of, and things which you might be afraid that if you let out, let become obvious, someone else might not love. So, and of course, this is, you know, not news to anyone. The important thing is our willingness, our ability to love ourselves. Because, and again, this is not anything you haven't heard 100,000 times. If you cannot love yourself, then you cannot believe in anyone else's love. So it doesn't actually matter whether they love you or not, because you can't let it in. You can't let it be real. You can't trust it. If you're listening for the first time, then you don't know that I'm also a psychotherapist, and I have had in my office over and over and over people who are unable to accept the love that is actually being offered to them. They simply don't see it. And of course they don't see it because inside they're saying to themselves, however unconsciously, they can't love me, I'm not lovable. So the challenge for all of us is to be willing to love the entire person. Well, before you can love the entire person, you have to actually know the entire person. And again, if you've been listening, you know that I believe that we are actually, to use the psychological term, in denial for so many things about ourselves. And if we're in denial for it, we obviously cannot know it. And if we cannot know it, then there's just no chance we can love it. But I am here to tell you that you are lovable. You are lovable even if there are lots of things about you which, should you be willing to know them, you might not like them. You are not them. They are not you. You are something bigger than that. And that thing is lovable. And therefore, anything within that big thing, God, talk about how difficult this is to understand. I'm making it much more complicated than it needs to be. However, that is the theme of the Lynn Show. That you can, and I believe should, know your entire self and love it, so that you can be at peace in the world, so that you can do all that it is possible for you to do. And to this end, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, because in order to do that, you just have to be who you are. It has to be okay with you to be this thing, which it is really difficult to do in our culture. Everything mitigates against it. In many cases, the family we come from tells us not to do it. But even if the family that we come from is accepting and encourages us to be ourselves, the culture says, don't be an artist, don't be silly. It doesn't pay. People don't have respect for it. And all these, you know it all, especially if you have ever dreamed of being a singer or a musician or an artist or a dancer, then you know all of the taboos against it. So I interview these people because they have honored themselves. And today I'm playing an interview with Eric Scott Reed, absolutely wonderful jazz pianist, who was fortunate enough to have parents who encouraged him, who said yes, yes, yes. And since he was playing the piano by the time he was two, good for them. Anyway, as often happens when you listen to an interview with an artist, you can hear that they are who they are. And this is so incredibly true of Eric Reed. Before I play my interview with Eric, I'm going to play a cut from his CD called The Dancing Monk. It's obviously a tribute to Thelonious Monk, and this is one of the classic Monk tunes, Round Midnight. And give you an idea of the sensibility of the jazz player before you hear the sensibility of the man. And so here, Round Midnight, followed by my interview with Eric Scott Reed.
Okay, so I'm here with Eric Reed, who is playing for the first time at the Newport Jazz Party, and who has absolutely knocked everybody on their ass. I mean, my God, it's so wonderful.
Well, thank you.
You know, I mean, well, you're spectacular, and what's so wonderful is to watch the musicians on stage when you play.
Oh, wow. See, I don't pay attention.
Well, half
time my eyes are closed.
Trust me, I'm sitting in the audience watching them listen to you.
Oh, wow.
And it's real interesting. Perhaps you have noticed that they keep saying, and the wonderful Eric Reed, and, you know, I mean, and
I hardly pay attention. I mean, you know, I hear Eric Reed, I stand. At this point, it's kind of all on cue. I hear my name, I stand about. Because, you know, because, like, you know, at this point, I'm going on autopilot.
Yes, you know, I know.
We're playing in so many different environments, and I just try to keep myself focused on the music. So if I'm not playing, I'm kind of lost. I'm kind of just in a daze. So as long as music is going on, I'm totally cool. Outside of that, I don't really know what to do with myself.
Well, let me assure you that you don't have to know anything else.
Okay.
I mean, it's wonderful. Now, I want to second what he said about When I Fall in Love.
Oh,
my God. And, you know, I'm a singer, and so I am yearning to hear a melody from time to time,
sure,
you know.
Sure, of course.
And what you did to that was just, I mean, so beautiful.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
And I was thinking, you know, it was so smart too, because there's all this frenetic stuff,
sure,
and it's over and over and over and over.
Right.
And then you brought it all the way down. Oh my God, it was beautiful.
Well, it's a tricky thing. You have to know how to read the audience. For instance, something like that would not have translated as well, say, at the Playboy Jazz Festival.
Really?
Because, well, that's about a party. People are there to, you know, hear a lot of loud music. A lot of people aren't really truly listening.
Yes.
I would imagine the only person that could really quiet an audience down like that would be Keith Jarrett.
Because they'd have to listen.
They'd have to listen. I don't think has he played the Playboy Jazz Festival?
I don't think he's, you see what I'm saying, for that reason.
But I mean, I've heard just a whole audience of thousands of people just be completely mesmerized by Keith Jarrett, and I guess I've always tried to grab a little bit of that and see if I can make that same kind of thing happen in my own way.
Well, you did it today. I mean, you absolutely did it today.
I love pretty melodies. I do.
Yes. Well, but see, it's so clear. You know, and I'm going to say it again. You know, a singer can tell when it's not just about how many notes you can play.
Absolutely.
But if you're really in it.
Yeah. If you're musical.
If you're musical, that's exactly right. And that's what that was.
Oh,
that's why that. That's why he said it made him cry.
Thank you so much.
Oh, my God, thank you. Wow. Okay, so I always ask the same question.
Mm-hmm.
How did this happen to you? How did you find it? How did it get started?
It's a God-given gift. I was 2 years old, and I was at my neighbor's house. They were babysitting me, and they had a piano. And they used to let me bang on their piano and on their pots and pans and on their furniture. And after playing on their piano for I don't know however long, I would just listen to things on the radio and on the record player, and I began to be able to pick out notes that I heard, and then I was just playing full-fledged songs. I hadn't started taking lessons until I was 5 or 6.
But you were playing before?
Yes.
Yeah.
Playing in church, I was playing in school assemblies and things like that.
You know, I hear this a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
It's astonishing.
But that's how most of us start.
Yeah, well, It's as though you came in with it.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely.
Right?
Absolutely.
It belonged to you.
It's almost genetic.
Yeah, well, exactly.
My father was a singer. He sang gospel music. And I was always surrounded by music.
Uh-huh.
So it's musically genetic, but also cultural, because I grew up around music all my life.
Yeah. Okay, all right. So here you are. You're this little kid, and you're playing this amazing music. And then they decide, oh, well, maybe we should give him lessons at
Absolutely,
five.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, and so you start having lessons.
I took private lessons for about 7 years.
And then
after that, it was pretty much just me. I just continued to listen, and I would listen to records by Horace Silver and Ramsey Lewis and Dave Brubeck and Art Tatum and Teddy Wilson. I listened to everybody. I didn't exclude anybody. And whatever it was that I liked, I listened to all of them.
And then you played it.
And then I played it as best as I could. I mean, Art Tatum, you know, that wasn't the easiest thing in the world to do, but I certainly made an attempt.
Do you sing?
I sing background, you know. I like to harmonize.
I can hear it. I can hear it. You know, you have a It just sounds like you would sing.
Okay.
Yeah, right?
I guess.
Okay, all right. Yeah. And do you write?
Absolutely.
Everything.
Everything. Gospel music, jazz music, I've written pop songs.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so they were saying that you were living in New York City, but now you're living in
L.A.? I was there for 20 years. I grew up in Philadelphia. I was born in Philadelphia. And then moved to California when I was 11. And then moved to New York for 20 years, and then I just moved back here to California.
Why?
My family's here.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All my people are here.
And so. You don't need to be in New York anymore.
Not anymore, no. No.
Right.
I went
career.
There at a time when it was important for me to be there.
Right.
And
right.
So I, you know, made my bones, and now I'm like, okay, now I'm ready for... I always preferred living on the West Coast because it's just more laid back.
Yes. Yeah. Especially. Well, I mean, if you were, you grew up in
Philly. Yeah, but you know.
Yeah, in Philly, that's not so laid back.
Not at all. But again, I was a kid.
Yeah.
When I was
right.
There. But this California is really what I call home.
Wait, you actually feel kind of laid back, even for a guy who's done 20 in New York?
Only because I'm older. When I was younger. I was way over the top. Even now, a lot of people would say I'm intense. But after I finish playing a set of music,
it's spent.
Yeah, I'm very cool.
Yeah, you've spent it all right there. Yeah, right there. So do you have plans? Do you have things you want to do?
Always. I'm always making plans. I'm always writing things down. I always got a million ideas, records I want to make, people I want to work with, things I want to build, schools I want to see, educational programs I want to see put in place. I've got a million things that I want to do. And just not enough time to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
so it's not.
Yeah, no, really. So I've hopefully got a good another, 40, 50 years to try to make some things happen. But this.
So are you prioritizing, or are you just? I mean,
well,
you know what I mean.
Right now, my biggest priority is really just sharpening my musical skills. But most immediately, I guess I'm trying to see how I can have a positive impact on the scene out here because we have. A lack of clubs, lack of really good places to play. And when I was living here in the late 80s, Alphonsus was here in the Loa, and Chadney's, and Jazz, etc. It was a really hopping place. And now it's practically a wasteland. There are still a few places, the Blue Whale and Angels and Royal St. Albans and Vitello's, Spazio's closed.
Spazio's closed
last year. Ooh. And the Jazz Bakery closed.
Yeah,
there.
Right.
She's still trying to do some things. But it's a very tricky situation. So I'm hoping through education, at the very least, because we've got to start with elementary school kids. High school's too late. We've got to start with elementary school kids, getting them to try to learn how to swing. But first, getting them to learn how to play their instruments. First, and then.
So, are you working in the schools?
Not as much as I'd like to be. That's another kind of. It's a great deal of politics.
What do you mean?
Well, you can't just go into a school and say, "Hey,
no, no, jazz. Right.
You have to go through a certain kind of processing and all that kind of stuff. So.
So, do you have plans for
Absolutely.
How to do that?
That's a high priority. I'm in the process of working on a business plan for that now. I can use all the help I can get, especially out here in LAUSD.
Yeah.
It's a mess. It's an absolute mess.
And that's because?
Any number of reasons. Corruption, apathy.
Yeah.
Economics.
Yeah.
Any number of reasons.
Well,
and all this, no new reasons.
No, that's right. Yeah. And don't you think, I mean, the arts are the first thing to go, right? I mean, so it's not just, this is a problem across the board. Theaters are trying desperately to figure out how to get another generation to want to come in and see live theater.
That's right.
It's the...
Well, people don't understand balance. In this country, there's so much here. We have an overabundance of stuff. But people don't understand balance. And people would say, well, do you think the arts are as important as math and science? Well, not everybody is geared towards math and science. Not everybody's going to become a chemistry teacher or a doctor.
Or a computer expert.
But that's what they try to do. They try to, see what the cream rises to the top. So by kind of weeding out those that don't test well or those that don't just do well in school naturally, then that just leaves everybody else in this barrel of kind of just like, well, what are we supposed to do?
Right.
You've taken away all of our other options for the people who aren't good
at those
math
things.
And science.
Right.
And, you have to have options. That's a balanced society. You can't just have a society of workers. you know what I'm saying?
I know.
There's got to be some part of life that is enjoyable. It can't always be about the bottom line, which is the dollar.
Yes. Well, and it's interesting that you say that. And what I was thinking you were going to say was that even those people who are good at math and science are unbalanced if they don't have music or art or theater or something that's about the heart,
mm-hmm.
that's about the psyche, that's about emotions, that's not mm-hmm. about mind, mm-hmm. that's not mm-hmm. about money,
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, I mean, what we used to call, you know, well-rounded.
Yeah, sure. A classical education.
Yeah, classical education, yeah. You know, yeah. Right. And that really has gone by the wayside. The
yeah.
whole idea
yeah.
that there's any value,
right.
you know, to being a well-rounded,
right.
you know.
Well, it's also impacted the way our young people interact and their social skills, because they're all in the video games and Facebook, and everything is a text, and people don't even have conversations anymore.
No, that's right.
Because we've gotten so, and adults too, we've gotten so sidetracked by technology and communicating through this wall of technology.
Yes.
So a conversation between two people is virtually non-existent in a lot of situations.
No, I think that's right, and I also think it's very dangerous.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It makes you less compassionate and
yes.
in touch with an actual human being.
Yes, yes.
You know? So yeah. it is dangerous.
Yeah, and, you know, and ironically, it's not only that you are then not as compassionate for another human being, but you won't even be as compassionate for yourself.
Sure.
You know, that humanity takes a step back.
Huge leap.
Right, right.
A huge leap back.
Right, right. It's, I'm older than you.
Mm-hmm.
And, So I was raised to really value all that stuff.
Sure, but ma'am and sir and no thank you and
that's
please come
again. That's right, that's right.
The idea of saying sir and ma'am, these kids don't get it.
No, or even please and thank you.
No, forget about it. They want to call me by my first name. I'm like, I'm twice your age.
Right.
It's just, you just don't do it.
No.
Well, you know, and their parents, well, you know, no, I don't know.
No.
There's got to be a line.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is my friend. No, this is your child.
Yes.
You can be friendly with your child, but you have to raise your child. So, but I don't have children, so I can't really, I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
And I'm a therapist. And I treat a lot of parents
okay.
who don't know how to parent.
Interesting.
Who are making the same mistake that you're making.
Sure, sure.
You know, that they're afraid of their children.
Yeah.
You know, they're afraid to be the parent to the child,
yeah,
to
yeah,
say,
yeah.
this is okay and this isn't okay.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, right, right.
Set some guidelines. Everybody has always said children want boundaries.
They do.
They want those boundaries.
They know,
people
they
don't
need
believe
them. They absolutely need
yeah,
them.
Yeah, they'll
right,
rebel,
right.
but that's their job.
That's their job, that's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I always say that. And, it's interesting. I mean, those parents who can't create boundaries for their children,
mm-hmm.
did their parents create boundaries for them? You know, did they not learn that it's okay to say no, to say that's not okay?
Oftentimes I think we spend too much time trying not to repeat the mistakes that our parents
yeah,
made
right.
with us. Instead of trying to forge new traditions, we can say, okay, you know what? I didn't really like the way my parents did X, Y, Z, so I'm not going to do that to my child. But you have to do
something.
You still have to create.
So, and I'm curious,
boundaries.
You sound like somebody who had an accepting family.
Oh, very much so.
Right.
But it was also a very disciplined family. My father was very old school. He grew up in the Depression era in the South. As a black
mm-hmm.
man, so a lot of racism and
yeah,
poor.
Right, right.
So he got the worst of it. And he and my mother both had determined when they got married, they weren't going to have that same dynamic with their children. They just said, this is what we're going to do. And I don't think they had a plan. I mean, it was 1957. They didn't have a plan. These were two people who were not college educated, and
right.
they just did the best that they could do with what they had, and then raised four children to adulthood. Who have children and grandchildren.
Right.
So I think they did a pretty fantastic job.
Oh, it's no, I mean, it's clear that they raised you
yeah.
really well. I mean, they raised a disciplined, dedicated, not to mention talented, but they necessarily, I mean, that's
Well, it's like the way you said, they were very accepting.
Right.
They never, ever stood in my way. They never discouraged me from wanting to do music. They encouraged me and motivated and said, you're going to go to college.
They absolutely said
I was going to college, but I fought against that and dropped out after a year.
Really?
But they insisted, so, I mean, that's what parents are supposed to do.
Right.
But I had always known, and they had always known that music was going to be, you know, my fate. But they made every possible sacrifice that they could, and they sacrificed in ways that I won't even ever realize until I become a parent, because that's what sacrifice is. You just you don't let your child know, I do this for you.
No.
You just do it.
You do it,
and then, you know, your children benefit from it, and then hopefully your children, you know.
Yeah.
So they made so many sacrifices for us. My father and my mother both worked. My mom wanted to stay home with her children, but we just didn't have that kind of economic status to do that. And back then, this is the 1970s, everybody worked.
Right.
Mothers in this, especially since women were, this is women. We're definitely working. But my mom was old school.
Yeah. She didn't want to.
She wanted to be
a wife
with her babies.
Mother, right.
Keep the home. He's like, but Jackie, you know, we can't have, you know, a 4 or 5 bedroom house and 4 kids. If I'm the only one working, it's just not going to happen.
Right.
So she's like, okay, fine. So she'd work at night. My father worked during the day. So
somebody was always home. That's that other thing.
So somebody was always
home. They were always going to be parents.
That's right.
And that's what shows.
That's right.
That is what shows. And also, you talk like an educated man.
Well, I've had a lot of experience. University of the streets. School of Hard Knocks.
Well, they did real well by you.
I didn't hang around ignorant people.
No, clearly not.
I hung around smart people. I was always an avid reader. And I just was always interested in history and government.
Right. And you like learning.
I love it. The thing for me is the exposure to something that I know nothing about.
And you like it.
I love it.
It's a little scary
at first, but it's like when you realize it's like there's so much out there. For the first time in my entire life, I saw a lunar moon. I had never in my life seen a ring around a moon.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen pictures of it.
Right.
But I never saw it, and I looked at it, and I was like, with my mom, you know, she's down in Murrieta, so you can see stars as clear as day. It's like the desert. And I looked, I said, Mom, I was freezing, it's about 40 degrees. I said, Mom, look, there's a lunar moon. She's like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. I remember I saw one. You saw one before? I said, I never saw one before. And so she's like, do you think it's a spaceship? So she was kind of messing with me. I got a little freaked out because I had never, ever in my entire life seen a lunar moon. I haven't seen a double rainbow. There's a lot that I still have yet to see.
Florida.
Okay.
Oh, we got it.
There's so much. You know, I've seen the Aurora Borealis.
Oh, have you?
But I haven't seen the Grand Canyon. So you see, I still don't feel as though I've lived yet, because there's still so much that I know I want to do, and there's so much more out there to be done.
Yeah, this is so interesting to me, because given where your parents came from, that they instilled this in you is remarkable.
But they knew instinctively that they had to, because they didn't have it. And life was so hard for them.
I'm sorry. Most people for whom it was hard they can't give it what they didn't get. Your parents were remarkable.
I would have to say so. They were kind of remarkable people.
There's no question about it.
They were pretty cool people. I mean, they'll tell you they were quite average.
Yeah.
But just in their, when you meet my mom, she's just this, you know, little old lady. I mean, she doesn't act or say anything. You know, she's just this little shy little, hi, how are you? Just a nice little sweet old woman. But, you know, if you hear her story, if she actually sits down with you and tells you her story and what she went through long before she even met my father, you're blown away. I mean, she should write a book. She's never going to do it. But she really should write a book, because she's an amazing woman. And she's quite a victorious person, because she's just very happy.
Oh, God, it's
very happy,
wonderful.
Happy-go-lucky person. My dad was a very happy person. He was a little curmudgeonly, but overall, you know, you could get a smile out of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't talk a whole lot, but he was the pleasant person to be around. So.
Well, you know, if the proof is in the pudding and you are the pudding, they did such a wonderful job.
Thank you.
And I don't know where talent comes from. I mean, I don't know whether it's, you know...
It's all spiritual.
Well, so,
gifts come from God.
Some
things, especially when you can't explain things. You shouldn't try.
I'm not trying.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a jazz piano player in Sarasota where I live. His name is Mark, Mike Markovarich.
Okay.
He's blind from birth.
Wow.
And he was trying to play what he could hear on the radio on his toy
mm-hmm.
piano when he was two.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah? And he's unbelievable.
God gives that. So listen, I know people who have perfect pitch who aren't musicians. Now, you know Renee Rosnes?
Mm-hmm.
Renee is from Canada, but Renee's adopted. Renee has two sisters. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, all three of them are adopted. So they're not blood,
they're not
related,
blood related.
But they all have perfect pitch.
Oh, my God.
But the other two don't play musical instruments, I don't think. I know Renee does for sure, of course. But the other two don't play, they're not professional musicians.
No.
But they have perfect pitch.
Mm.
And perfect pitch is just something you either have or you don't.
Right,
I think
like
you can develop relative pitch.
Yes, obviously. Right.
Perfect pitch.
That comes with you.
Yeah.
That's right, that's
yeah.
right.
And it comes to people who aren't musical. So I don't know how they figure out they have perfect pitch. I have no idea how they actually identify that.
They hear things that are wrong and it irritates
them. I get it.
Right?
Maybe that's what it is.
This is the law.
Yeah, okay. So there you go.
I worked with a piano player once who had perfect pitch, and she said it's a curse.
It can be. Because you hear everything.
Right, everything. Right, yes.
You hear
right,
a car
right,
humming
right,
and beeping.
Right,
oh,
right,
God,
exactly.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
And anything that's off.
Yeah.
You know.
It.
And most of us are in relatives, so.
Sure.
You know. Right, come on.
Right, stop scooping up. No, get on there.
Get up there.
Right.
So, I like to ask people, who have dedicated their life to an art, to just think about it for a second and say, just talk about what that's like, if there's anything you want to say about that.
Well, more importantly, I've dedicated my life to faith. We grew up in a Christian household, so everything I believe and everything I do is all filtered through God and what I believe the Bible to explain to me about God and about life. So whether I'm, you know, playing the piano or writing music or whatever it is I'm doing, all of that is influenced by holiness, by righteousness, by God. Not this sense of right and wrong or superiority or do's and don'ts, but just a sense of God's spirit in me and how I translate that to other people.
Yeah, what is coming through you?
Absolutely.
Too, right, right.
Because we're all just vessels.
Right, yeah, right.
All of us. And we're put on this earth, anybody ever wants to ask the question, why are we here? We are here on this earth to bless other people.
With whatever it is
we have.
That's
the bottom line.
Right.
That's the answer right there. That is the answer to life. Why are we here? We're here not to oppress other people. We're definitely not here for that reason. We're definitely not here to hate somebody because they believe differently than we do, because they act or look differently. We're definitely not here for that. We're definitely here on this earth to have a positive impact on some other person's life. And if you're not doing that, then you're just taking up space. That's just, now I'm not saying your life is a waste, but if you're not having a positive impact on a child or on your immediate surroundings, your neighbor, your boss, if you're just a person who's just walking through life, just sucking all the energy out of the room.
Well, maybe this is a leap that you don't make, but if you're not making a positive impact, then it's possible you're making a negative one.
It's possible.
I mean, it's really hard.
Well, sometimes you're not making
anything.
This is true, but some people have no impact because, so in that case, the worst impact is on themselves.
Yes, that's right.
They might not be having a negative impact on somebody else because they're not doing anything, but they're impacting themselves negatively because they're not engaging.
Well, not only that, but the likelihood is that they feel they have no reason.
Exactly.
This is a terrible thing.
And there are a lot of people in the world who feel they have no purpose, and I feel so horrible for people like that. What is my talent? What is my skill? And people look at musicians and athletes, and they think that's not. There are talents and skills in many different areas, and God gives every single person on this earth a gift. You have to figure out what that gift is. Is your gift a gift of listening? Is your gift a gift of compassion or counseling
or cooking.
Encouraging or cooking, whatever
right,
it is.
Right,
you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Martha Stewart found her gift. Oprah Winfrey found her gift. You know, or people who build schools or people who babysit people's kids. What is your passion? What is your gift?
You know, your parents' gift was at least in some ways you. What they gave you and your siblings, right?
Sure.
I feel that way about my parents.
Sure,
They were, well, my parents... I'll take this out because I can edit this.
Okay,
thing.
All right.
But my parents, I mean, my parents are both dead now.
Mm-hmm.
But at one of them, the funerals, my sister and brother and I got up and, well, we got up and talked to both of them. And one of them, my brother said, you know, you would come home and you would find the bus driver or the post office person sitting having coffee at our house.
Wow.
Because my parents were just, you know, they just, everybody was a part of the family, you know?
Yeah.
And
that's awesome.
It's a, you know.
That's a gift. There's always some house on the block.
Right.
That everybody goes. The door's always open.
That's right.
You can just walk in.
That's right. That's
hey,
right.
Mrs. Jackson.
Right.
Hey,
right.
Mrs.
Right.
You know, my ex-wife, her mother's house was that house on that block.
Mm-hmm.
That was just the house that everybody went to.
Right. Everybody felt at home.
Yeah.
That's right. Everybody felt at home.
And when it was time to go to bed, we're going to bed. We'll see you later.
See you later.
Both
right.
Behind
right.
You.
Right.
That's just...
Right. That's how my parents were.
And I have never been that person. I'm a very private person, so people know not to come by my house without calling or knocking.
No, but you have a different gift, and we
know
that.
A different gift, exactly.
Don't worry about it. It doesn't have to be that gift.
Okay, good. I'm glad. I'm glad.
Don't worry about it.
But, you know, because there's a good chance you'll just be standing there at the door waiting for me to come answer. Because
right, I'm not
I'm not expecting anybody, so I'm just going to keep on. You know, but I've always wanted to be more inviting, but... I spend so much time in the company of people.
Well, no, and you spend a lot of time giving, honey. It's all going out.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, you have to be careful about that.
You're right. I have to refill.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly right. Also, there are, you know who Jung was?
Yes, Carl Jung.
Right, well, he had this theory about... extroverts and introverts,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And extroverts are people who draw energy
mm-hmm.
from other people.
Mm-hmm.
Introverts are people who draw energy from themselves.
Interesting.
So if you're an introvert, which
right.
I suspect you are,
sure.
then you're somebody who has to withdraw
mm-hmm.
in order to regenerate, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you can spend, right?
Exactly.
But you wouldn't then, having spent, you wouldn't go out to a party to rejuvenate.
Right.
But an extrovert would.
That's very interesting.
You know, they need to be getting it from someplace
That's
else.
That's very interesting,
you know?
Because the idea that people have is the opposite.
The opposite, I know.
They feel that extroverted people are these people
saying,
no, but they're sucking.
That's right. That's
they're
exactly
just
right.
Pulling.
Well, according to Jung's.
Exactly.
Right. I mean,
but there's
another definition. But
I've got you, but
right.
I love that one.
Isn't it great?
That's actually much more fitting.
Yes, and it feels so right. You know it about yourself.
Yeah. Because I have a tendency to be, shy may not be the accurate word, but I don't just gravitate towards people naturally.
No.
In my line of work, I'm very open, and
right.
I'm like, hi, how are you? Oh, yes.
Right.
I can wear that coat, and then I have to, okay, now it's time for me to find someplace
to be quiet.
So,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
I have to do it.
It's the perfect, you know, your textbook.
So I would imagine what maybe most artists are introverted.
It depends.
Okay.
You've seen those party guys and gals that are, you know, I mean, after the gig, they want to go out and party.
But see, that's not me.
No, I know, but
that's not really me.
But that's an extroverted thing. And, you know, you've seen that. You know that there are those people who, right?
I guess you're right. Yeah, so it just depends on the personality.
Whether you're
a doctor or athlete or whatever.
And it doesn't matter. It's, any career
can
have extroverts and introverts
in it.
You know, and it's not... a good or a bad.
Right,
it's just the way it is.
That's right.
It's like, you know,
we have to recognize who you are. If you don't know what type of person or what type of personality you are, what you need, you're miserable, and you're confused, and you're tired, and you don't realize why is you keep winding up in certain kinds of spiritual or mental or physical dynamics because you don't really understand yourself.
That's right.
And I had to understand, like, you know what, I need to get away. And I need to be okay with that.
That's right.
I need for people to not say to me, you're closed off or you're standoffish. It's like, you know what, I've been around people the past 3 hours.
Yeah, right.
I need to go someplace. You know, one thing I hate is when I come off stage, Eric, I just got finished playing an hour of music.
Yeah, right.
And you want to grab on me? Do you have any idea
what that
how you're just
me?
Total?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You just caused me so much stress and lack of peace. So I try to find the nearest and
exit.
Some place to hide as soon as I get off stage. You know, I close the door. Oh, my God. Please just give me 5 minutes to just, you know, I just played an hour of music.
Yeah, they don't get it.
They don't, and I don't fault them. Like you said, you know, people don't get it.
So. Well, but it's your responsibility to take care of yourself.
Exactly,
theirs. No, not theirs. But it is your responsibility to take care of yourself. And,
you're right.
And in that way, if you don't know yourself, how are you going to take care of yourself?
You're right.
You know, and that the stress of trying to be somebody you're not. It's awful. This has been just remarkable, Eric.
Thank you so much.
In addition to all the pleasure you gave me up there on the stage.
Thank you so much.
This was just a wonderful interview.
Thank you.
And I just want to say Eric is helping me down.
You were up there, though. I wasn't getting up there.
I was up there.
Well, okay. I could not have scripted that better, could I? I don't tell people what I want them to say, but there's Eric Scott Reed saying exactly what I believe, which is that it is our ability, our willingness to be who we are, whether that is what we think everyone else is, whether we think other people will approve of it, will, as I said at the beginning, we think anyone will love it, that it is our willingness and our ability to be true to ourselves, to love the person that we are, which makes for the most satisfying life that we can have. So, Eric, as so many of the artists that I interview does, demonstrates what it's like. And as always, I hope that when you hear this, whatever it is that you might be denying in yourself, whether it be, as Eric and I were talking about, you know, the need to be quiet, to isolate from time to time, to withdraw into yourself, even if everyone you know is a party animal or lots of people want you to hang out with them, or people accuse you of being, quote, reclusive, as though that were some dreadful disease. Whatever it is that feels right to you, even if it feels wrong to a lot of people in your life, that you are able to love yourself enough to give yourself what you need. I talk about this, and information about this is in the book I wrote, which is with all the podcasts from all the shows I did and anything else you might want to know about me, on my website called thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow.com. And if you are listening to this show or have listened to any of my other shows or gone to my website and listened to any podcast and you liked it, would you please be kind enough to mention this? If you are on any of the social media, if you tweet, or if you Facebook, or if you MySpace, or if you LinkedIn, or if you just have friends that you talk to, I would appreciate it greatly if you would just say that you heard something you liked at thelynnshow.com. So, okay, I want to play another cut from an original composition of Eric's. And just to point out that he is not only a brilliant composer, but he can play fast. I'm going to play this cut from his original album called Stand. And this cut is called Getcha Shout. So here, Eric Reed. Reed and get a shout. If you want to find out more about Eric or me or Josh Hackney, without whom these shows would not occur, as he is my IT electronic recording, pretty much everything there is to know, guru. So if you want to know anything about any of us, you can get this information by going to my website, thelinshow.com, and clicking on email me and saying I need Josh, or tell me how to get in touch with Eric, Scott Reed, or tell me more about you, or anything that you can ask me a question I can't answer. Anything you like, you can just go on up there, comment on the shows, on me, on anything you like. Okay, so we're about done with this show. I have very little time. And so let me just say that, as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show. Something that entertained you, something that amused you, something that stimulated your curiosity, something that will bring you back. Because I will be back next week, same time, same station, and I sure hope you will be too. Oh, I forgot to say, we're going to go out on another tiny cut from Eric Scott Reed's original album called Stand. This is an interlude, and it's just a very sweet little piece, and I thought it'd be nice to end the show with it. So here again, Eric Scott Reed.
Phoenix, we won't give up the flight, no, we will not
I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten limper, but I won't.